It's the big show. Yes, we're here. We've got a brand new setup again. You see, we gave you the new studio last week, all the green screen. We've got a bit better lighting now, and we've got a new camera as well. And a huge thanks to Paul Shadwell, who spent most of yesterday afternoon on Skype with me, giving me remote tech support, trying to get the Blackmagic card, capture card, to work with the HDMI camera. And oh man, it got a bit horrible. And then the HDMI cable flaked out, and I got a new camera. We're here. It may all go horribly wrong during the course of the afternoon, but who knows? It's all right so far. Joining me, fantastic panel, really great eclectic bunch this week, and a couple of new boys as well to bend over later and give six of the best to. Yes. Top left, it's the Streak. How you been, boy?
Hello, I'm back again.
Been a long time.
Yeah, I had to duck out to work and working the late shift, the graveyard shift, which just... doesn't really work so well when you have to be somewhat engaged in talking and thinking and pretty much anything.
Yeah, okay. No, not so hot. But you're all right. You're well.
I'm pretty okay, yes. I also discovered that it's almost 3 years ago since I made first contact with the, back in the day.
I thought you were going to talk about bloody aliens then.
He was.
Maybe he was, yeah.
I was traveling in space.
You were travelling in space and time. Yes. Now, how's the book sales going?
I haven't checked, to be honest. I've been so busy doing other work, so I currently don't really know. Hopefully they're doing okay.
Okay, confident man. I like that.
Had to be a bit confident.
Excellent. Next to him, new boy, Johnny Major.
How you doing?
I'm all right, mate. Now, you're a web developer from Chicago.
Yes.
And you met Paul Wheatley on honeymoon.
Yeah, I sure did. Yeah. Over in Italy. We ran into each other at a Irish pub.
Yeah, ran over being the descriptive word, I think, there from what he was saying.
Yes, yes.
You and he drank a few beers that night.
Yeah.
Is the way he describes it. But.
I think only three at tops. But,
Tops, right, yeah. Okay. Well, the only thing, actually, that he's relayed the story to me before, but the only bit of the story he ever relays is the fact that he, A, met you, and then, B, drove a boat whilst puking over the side the following day. It was that good a night.
Yeah, I didn't have to do the boat part, but, yeah, I heard about that later afterwards.
Yeah, it wasn't good. It wasn't pretty. but good lad, eh? Well, join us. Welcome to the show, mate. And I hope you're back on again soon. And we'll keep an ear out for the help show. I don't know if you've had a listen to that, but we could always do with extra web devs on the help show.
Okay, great.
Most definitely. Beneath him, it's Brecky.
Yes, it is.
Brecky's from Iceland, but living in Sweden and running a podcast network.
Yeah, I'm a telecom professional, but on the side I run a podcasting network called Psycon.
Now, is it English or is it, because I have to admit, I've never heard of you before we has found you, so I do apologize, but...
It's quite all right. I'm still an up-and-comer. It's all in English, yes. Most of the hosts are Brits, actually.
Okay, righto.
We got two Americans and two Swedes.
Yeah, you got to watch the Americans getting in. Once they're in the door, mate, that's it. You can't get rid of them, I'm telling you. I've got more tomorrow. Welcome, mate, and again, enjoy. Next thank name you. Is Righty.
Not Greeny, then.
No, not Greeny.
Yeah, I heard that.
What do you mean you heard that?
On the back, sir.
I call Greeny Righty. Yeah, I know. Sorry, mate. He's infectious, that boy. What can I say?
I know.
What have you been up to?
Oh, working hard, doing my bit, bossing people around, getting things done. That's the main thing, isn't it?
Taking care of business, is that what they say?
Taking care of business, yeah, exactly. That's what I do.
That's what we do. Good man. And last but by no means least, a long time away, no good reason for it whatsoever, Gasmas. It just kind of dropped out 1 week because you had emergencies, didn't you? And then you had the old refereeing shenanigans went on for a bit.
That's right.
And we just kind of never bothered to get you back on, so...
No, well, I thought, that's it. He doesn't want me back. Bugger him. That's what I thought.
No. never, mate. Not a chance.
Oh, by the way... Oh, he's gone. No, he's not. He's still there. I'll just say hello to Paul Shadwell, who's in the chat room, as you mentioned him earlier. So,
good, man. Good old Paul. Thank you very much, Paul. I did try and... I don't know if you were there to hear the thanks, but I'd have been lost without you yesterday trying to get all this crap done. It made a huge difference. The big week in tech, what's been going on then? Not a lot, really, I suppose. Twitter was going to buy someone. but we don't know if that's happening or not. And I think someone's taking that story on, so we'll leave that one alone. And there's been a few other things kicking off. But who's going to start? Do you want to start us off with that story, Johnny? You're the new man. First dibs at was it your story?
Sure, I could. I wasn't doing the Twitter one. I was talking about the Google driverless cars.
Oh, no, that was the one. Yeah, go for it then, Johnny. Talk us through it.
Interesting. Just, you know, they came out. It was over 700,000 miles and without a ticket, the driverless cars from Google. And just the thought process was that the amount of revenue that's going to be lost if we ever get to that point. I'm not sure if we will, because people rushing to the airports or something like that, would they really want a car that's going to obey the speed limit? But it's just kind of an interesting spinoff, because we're seeing that too with, like, in Colorado with the legal marijuana and stuff like that. So I just thought that was a really interesting spin on how they did that, because they even brought up numbers of, you know, per officer. I think they're saying officer brings in about $300,000 a year of revenue. So what would the state do at that point? Or how would they handle it?
Well, I think there's a very simple answer to that. The state would then start charging Google for the obvious income they would get from the people sitting in the cars having to watch ads, and they'd probably be taxed putting the cars on the road, of course.
That's a good point.
There have been plenty of examples of technological change just crushing entire industries. I mean, back in the days, we had people lighting street lamps. They don't do that anymore. That entire industry went away. Once the fridge was invented, people didn't sell ice anymore. The entire ice industry just disappeared overnight.
So I
think this is just something that, you know, people are going to complain for a couple of months and then it's going to quiet down. Very much like the Pirate Party hopes, you know, piracy is going to quiet down once people realize that, oh yeah, we probably are selling just as well, if not better.
Yeah, I think that the one thing that you've got to be really careful of is the fact that the donut industry is going to go out completely. I mean, that's why Dunkin' Donuts, that's why the word donuts is spelt incorrectly in America. It's because if they spelt it in the full way, cops would starve.
Mm. Well, you know, they've just got to innovate. They've got to come up with new deals and better prices and so on. The donut industry.
I suppose actually there'd be lots of add-on sponsorship deals for you know, all of these drive-through coffee firms and donut firms and hamburger firms. They'll all be trying to get a piece of Google, who will be charging them exorbitant amounts, so that the car would automatically drive through one of their little kiosks whenever you're near one. Of course,
you were going to say piece of the pie, then, weren't you, Gareth?
No. No,
that's not a bad idea. I mean, just having them route through specific areas rather than other areas. You know, pay $1 and we'll route you through the most commercial ridden areas. Pay us $10 and we'll route you the quickest way.
In car tolls.
Yeah.
Holy crap. I'm glad you're not
on a cheapskate and you like get taken to a place where it's most likely that you'll stop and I think I want to buy whatever. Like food or
God, I'm glad you're not on Google's board.
Or having just different advertisements based off where you're at in that area. You know.
Sure.
Yeah, no, that'd be I mean, what do you want to go to? Link to your Google Glass, you're sitting there watching your Google Glass and everything's going by at a rate of knots and it says there's a Denny's nearby or something. Do you fancy a really unhealthy breakfast?
Right. Use the offer code Google at checkout and you'll get a 10% discount.
Yep.
We've just invented the entire business model that they've got for Google. For they're already well ahead of us, I'm sure.
I'm sure they are.
I'm sure they are.
The car industry is doomed.
I mean, to get away from the idea of, you know, we hate losing control. It's bad enough for some people when they get on airlines, giving up the control to a pilot who actually can fly the plane rather than them try and hold on to it.
But, it's his job.
Yeah, exactly. But who here would most definitely use a Google car as it stands at the moment?
I would.
You definitely would?
I think I would too,
I definitely would.
Mainly for the convenience. I mean, just imagine reading a book on the way to work.
Yeah.
No.
You wouldn't do it.
No,
right, you won't.
You've
still got an outside toilet, so be fair. I've really hit the nerve there. Sorry, dude. Won't do it again.
9 tests in. I haven't passed yet. I'll put it out there. I'm a terrible passenger, and I'd rather a human who I can shout at. I can't shout at a computer.
I was just going to say, actually, would you, if you have one of these cars, would you still have to have someone who can drive in the car?
That's a really good question.
Well, you've got to be able to grab the wheel. I've seen a lot of videos now where there are certain things. I think there was CNET did one where they were going down in Gothenburg, and there was a point where a car crossed the lane and they still had to grab the wheel. I think you still have to be alert. I don't think you can, like you say, sit there and read a book all the way to work. There's a certain point where the kind of human element has to kick in.
Sure. I mean, at the moment, that's true. But as soon as every single car is automatic, then that's not going to be the case anymore.
Yeah.
Do you grab the wheel as it is, though, righty?
Yeah, I'm like, Jesus Christ, what are you doing? I hope my wife doesn't watch this.
You walk a lot, don't you, then?
I walk a lot, yeah. You know that, don't you? But there was a thing this week saying that there may be an algorithm in these kind of autonomous cars that if your tire blows, and it would do an analysis of the cars around you, and if there were two people in the car that you may hit, it would then divert your car off the side of a cliff to kill you instead of killing two people in the car because it's less collateral damage.
Utilitarianism. I like it. Yeah.
They've already programmed it with the iRobot algorithm.
Yeah. Asimov strikes back here, the three laws of robotics.
So you'll buy a car that could say, yes, I am programmed to kill you.
But surely the car must estimate your net worth first.
you have 700 Twitter followers. Nah, you go over the cliff, you go.
Right.
The capitalist iRobot algorithm. We have a show title.
There you go. It's a mouthful.
Straight, you've been very quiet, mate. Come on, what would you do?
I am still a bit skeptical towards the whole car drives itself. Although I would probably be interested in it when it finally does arrive on the big market, so to speak, and it's more than just a tech company like Google. I mean, we've seen Volvo doing the test already this fall in Gothenburg.
Yep.
I don't remember any specific other companies, but there's a whole bunch of them getting geared up for it, as far as I know. So when it gets a bit more tested, more, shall we say, perfected, I'll be interested in trying it at least.
Isn't there a famous video of a Volvo that was driving itself and it drove straight into the back of a lorry?
No, that was the brake test. They have this new auto brake system and it failed spectacularly during the press unveiling of it or something like that.
Yeah. And there's a bloke on the side going to the bloke next to him. Your turn.
Well, that was not their best moment.
Volvo actually say they'll have driverless cars by 2017.
Yeah, they're ambitious.
Because they reckon they've already got the technology in the cars that they're producing today that could be put into kind of automated cars. Mm. So that there's no extra kind of technology needed. All the kind of sensors and things that they need are already in the cars they're doing today. So I think they're collecting a lot of data already.
Mm-hmm. One of the biggest problems with driverless cars is we're working on two different technologies at the same time. One of them is the car drives itself independently of everything around it. And the other, which I think is the one that Google's working at, is... the car interfaces with everything around it and interfaces with other driverless cars and with a cloud solution that knows, you know, that there's a traffic jam 20 kilometers ahead and so on. There are huge levels of difficulty in that kind of solution.
Given how well, or shall we say how not well, the cloud works in general, I'm kind of scared already.
Well, Google's cloud is... you know, there's this saying, Facebook doesn't do security, Apple doesn't do social, and Apple doesn't do cloud, and Google doesn't do social. So I'm fairly confident that Google can solve the cloud issue.
So there's the bigger question. It's not about whether you'd put your hands in the life of the car. It's whether which 3G network you'd put your life and hands of.
Exactly.
Oh, I'm not going with O2, stuff that. Oh, I'm not going with the, you know, bollocks.
You've run out of bandwidth.
Just think how many SIM cards you'd have to have in your car.
Oh, terrible.
Redundancy.
Wow.
Chat room's gone off on one. I shout at computers all the time, says Wynn Ryder, so he wouldn't be good in the car, I don't think.
He says everything.
I'd happily let the car drive me, said Serenac. Geoffrey, Jim, don't get me wrong, I love driving, so I'd always want the manual option. Solayam says the insurance implications are massive. What a minefield, don't you think? Jim also says driverless cars auto tracking equals no privacy.
Well, how much privacy do we have nowadays anyway? I mean, your phone's already tracking you, your credit card's already tracking you, your employer's already tracking you with RFID chips in your badge and so on.
And speed cameras on the roads.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you can also get prosecutions based on history of your sat-nav, can't you? So if the police sees your sat-nav and they go through the data and they see that you sped along a certain road on the coordinates, they'll do you for it.
There was even a case in Norway a couple of years ago when somebody drove through a toll booth and then drove through another toll booth a couple of, half an hour, 45 minutes later, and they realized there was no way he could have gone through the first toll booth and then the second toll booth without speeding in between. Because of the time difference.
Was he in a DeLorean?
But we've got average speed cameras over here, haven't we? So
sure.
Now, Johnny, you're the man that's in the country that drives, and you've been quite quiet about this. You said, "Yeah, I totally would," but I mean,
right? I would just being in the city. It's pretty much public transportation or walking around. Right. However, when needing to drive, it would be great to have. I would use that, especially because then I could go to the bar and have somebody take care of me or get me home.
Well, no, as much as you haven't got Righty in there as a non-driver,
right?
Have you got a blow in the thing and it won't let you go home if you're pissed? Because then that defies the entire reason.
Right.
Pissed equals drunk, sorry. Not pissed as in angry.
Yeah, so right. You get pulled over for drunk driving, but you're not actually driving.
Right.
Sure.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Or who gets the ticket if there is an issue?
Google!
Driver? Google. There you go. Google. The manufacturer of the car?
Right. I mean, they should have built in safeguards, I assume.
Yeah.
Right.
Haven't they been wrestling with that issue in, I think, California?
They have,
decided that you cannot be sleeping while the car is driving itself.
No. For example.
I assume because of the aforementioned safety issue, and you have to be there to actually control the car if you need to.
Let's just be clear then. You can't get pissed. You can't fall asleep. You can't read a book. You can't watch a movie. You can only look at Google adverts. Google, shove your car up your ass.
Yeah,
absolutely nothing to do with it.
Well, can you text?
What's the point? Oh, there you go. The one saving grace, you can access social media. Yeah. Thanks, Bricky. Yeah, you've totally tipped it for me now.
They'll build in Google Plus into every Google car.
That's God, no. Oh.
3/4 of the planet already texts whilst driving anyway, so.
Yeah, true.
No change there.
Good story, mate. Excellent one. I think that's going to rumble on for a long, long time. I don't see it in my lifetime. I really don't. I mean, when my life ends, it's a debate, but whether we live or go.
Think about it this way. We've been promised, flying cars for the last 70 years now, I think?
But that was, I mean, that was going back to the late 70s, early 80s, when they thought we might have some fossil fuel left over. But, I mean, once we're at the stage now that we realise we aren't, and electrical power isn't going to do it.
I just want my hoverboard. That's all I want. Want my hoverboard.
Well, nearly all the railway lines are getting electrified now because they're not going to have diesel trains anymore in the network for the UK. The new high-speed train is going to be all electric. None of it's going to be diesel-powered or anything like that because they want the fuel to go with the planes for the journeys that have to be made. And we're going to see an underwater tunnel perhaps across the Atlantic at some point and I think we'll see a bridge, but...
Well, there was talk of a tunnel between China, Russia, Canada, and the US.
Yeah, that would work. They're good routes, aren't they? And they're all vacuums as well, aren't they? So it's there's no wind resistance, and they reckon you can do the journey in 54 minutes,
right?
And
they're not going to do a tunnel under the Atlantic. I mean, the Mid-Atlantic Rift will sort that out.
Well, no, it's suspended. It's suspended. It's going to be 100 foot down. That's it. And it's going to be pumped out, and
it's going to have floats on the top.
No, it's going to. They reckon it'll be tethered, so they'll go down and tether it. But they reckon it'll be a complete vacuum. So once you start, you enter through an airlock, and then you're in a complete vacuum. And
who's doing this?
Well, this is no one's doing it because it's still billions and billions and billions of dollars. but they reckon it's 54 minutes, 36 of which is speeding up and slowing down. 18 each either end. The actual transit time is only 18 because it's so slippy, because there's absolutely no wind resistance. You can go at ridiculous velocities. But you've got to take your time to get up to those speeds, and you've got to take your time to get down to them. So, unless we come down with the what's it compensator thing that they had in Star Trek. What was it? Was that
Heisenberg compensator? Heisenberg.
I thought it was Heisenberg, but then I thought of Breaking Bad and I second guessed myself.
Yeah, no, it's because of the Heisenberg uncertainty principle. Right. That they just nullify using this thing. This is similar to to Elon Musk's Hyperloop, isn't it? It's more or less the same technology, but in larger scale.
Mm. Well, we'll see. Hmm. We'll see what'll happen. You've got a story for us, Brecky. You were talking about the Twitter thing, weren't you, earlier?
Yeah, Twitter. I mean, back on late Monday, early Tuesday, we heard rumors that Twitter might be buying SoundCloud. And Twitter's always had this problem with music. They tried to launch this hashtag music service that just failed miserably. Nobody ever used it, and nobody really understood why Twitter had a music service. It just didn't feel native. So they decided to try to buy SoundCloud. So Monday and Tuesday, that was the big story. And then on Wednesday, they said, nah, we can't get the finances to work, so let's not. And that was that. But the story has me wondering, I mean, is Twitter going to reach out and try to buy another service? Or is SoundCloud going to try to sell themselves off to somebody else? What if Google now buys SoundCloud? Or what if Twitter now buys Last.fm or whatever?
Yeah, because Google Music's next? A runaway success, isn't it?
Right.
Maybe I should let Twitter know that Streak Machine Music is for sale.
Oh, of course.
They seem to be shopping.
Facebook, my podcast network is also for sale. $2 billion is fine.
Yeah, no. How many listeners you got? Because I reckon I'd be 8 billion there. 16 billion?
Well, we're, you know, it's on a good month, 10,000. On a bad month, 5,000.
We have our moments of being called ridiculous on this network, but at least there's nothing stuck on your face that makes you look a dick.
Right, right.
It's only in your ears.
There is that.
No, I mean, so is there a plan for music for Twitter? Or was it just a kind of speculative dabble, Facebook's bought something, we ought to look at buying something?
Right, that's what I'm wondering. I mean, Twitter wants to get into music for some reason, and I still don't understand why. They're still, you know, they're still not working properly as an advertisement platform. They're still not monetizing properly on what they already have. So why are they trying to add something new and something so completely different to what they're currently offering?
But there's a social thing around music, isn't there? Music is entirely social nowadays. I think Apple tried that with Ping with great success, didn't they?
Like I said, Apple doesn't do social.
Exactly. And I think that's probably the thing. Music is a very social thing because a lot of things that I would like to mute from my Twitter feed, people go, I'm listening to this song, I don't care. And I think that's what they went with. And you have so much noise that people really didn't care about it. And obviously with the Twitter music, it kind of just faded into nothing. Buying SoundCloud wouldn't have done anything else. It would have been the same service. I'm listening to this on SoundCloud. So It wouldn't have done any different.
I think the thing with Ping was that they wanted you to be their salesman. That was the key. Because it was integrated into a store, you'd have a person then saying, right, okay, I'm listening to X. They had 1,400 followers, 1,800 followers, 300,000 followers. Imagine someone like Miley Cyrus at 20 million followers going, I'm listening to, and what that does for the sales of that. And I mean, to a certain degree, that's massively artificial as well. I mean, that scares the hell out of me for influential people kind of coercing my son into buy stuff based on what he sees that they're listening to. But I've got to say, I've got Skype line one that we have here. I chat to a guy named Rob Lines periodically, and I do it a little bit in the chat room, a little bit on Skype. But he's got a thing where every time he listens to something, it comes up on Skype. And I love Rob to bits. He's a lovely, lovely guy, and we have a great conversation. But the music thing, there's a bit of me, oh, piss off. You know, because you look at my Skype box, and it's just full of Rob Lines is playing, Rob Lines is playing, Rob Lines is playing, and it's just, oh, no.
You don't need to know, do you?
I've upset him now. I didn't mean to upset you, Rob, but it's just, you know, it fills up and it gets in the way is what I'm trying to say.
I've got the same thing, but for TV series on my Skype.
Right.
So every time I watch the latest episode of Doctor Who or whatever, it says I'm currently watching this episode of whatever.
How does it know?
It integrates with iTunes.
Oh, does it? Oh, God, I wouldn't do that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we've just moved on from food pictures, really. That's all.
Pinterest. Is Twitter going to look at something then, or is it going to be just a whiff?
Haven't they got to do something to start trying to, you know, encourage more investment so they can make money? Because they're just making money.
That's the thing. Yeah, I mean, they're still losing money hand over fist. They're not doing well financially. They're the Nintendo of social media at the moment.
Yep. But they're never going to make money because they've edited this, the kind of social consciousness. Because when you can't watch a TV show without a hashtag being on it. You know, you can't be on a web page without a hashtag being on it. It's everywhere. It's all about Twitter. And if they can't get any money out of what they're doing now, Yeah. They could buy anyone. They're not going to make any money. Go, they're there. Everyone knows what Twitter is. And if people aren't going to click on the ads, they're not going to make the money.
My timeline the other night was full of frigging Eurovision. And I can't stand Eurovision. I think it's the worst piece of television out there outside of Miss World.
I'm sorry about that.
Disgusting. But no, there was everyone I follow was like, oh, you sad bastards.
Not me, mate. Not me.
I have this idea that people should try to implement as much as possible. If there's something going on, like a convention or a Eurovision or something, there should be an official Eurovision account. And then every time you want to tweet something about Eurovision, you at reply the Eurovision account. That way, people who aren't following Eurovision don't need to see it.
Or you can mute it, at least.
Or that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Assuming there's a hashtag or, you know, a term that shows up every single time. But, you know, if somebody just wrote at Eurovision, wow, I'm liking Malta's music, then I wouldn't see it because I'm not following at Eurovision.
Batwench loves Eurovision. Why did I not see that comment coming? there's a serious point here. Twitter is losing money hand over fist, which means at some point someone's going to close the door and key the gates. And I can't have that. I'm sorry. My OCD and my network of people that I talk to on a regular basis is Twitter. I don't do Google Plus. I don't do Facebook particularly. You know, I'm not great on those platforms. I live on Twitter. I've got a cousin who's on WhatsApp and I never speak to him because he won't go on Twitter. He won't link it to Twitter at all. I'm like, okay, well, stuffy then. I'm not talking to you anymore.
If you look at the Twitter stock, I mean, it's been going down quite steadily over the past half year or so. Just looking at December 2013, the stock was up on $70. It's down on 30 now.
Jeez.
Or 31 and a half. So, you know, there is real concern to be worried here, or a real reason to be worried. And I just hope that Twitter has something up their sleeve. You know, obviously buying SoundCloud didn't work. They couldn't get the money to work, or the finances just didn't make sense to them. But what does?
Do you think you're going to get to the stage where you end up buying an amount of credit and you can't put a link in your tweet or something like that unless you've got credit in your account? Because that's a bit where the DM thing was coming from as well, perhaps.
Or just
I have this idea that they should treat Twitter like a stock market. People can invest in a Twitter account, and then as that Twitter account becomes more popular, your value increases. So I buy stock in at Microsoft, for example, and then as Microsoft becomes more popular, my investment increases. That's a great way for them to earn money.
You were going to say something there, Johnny?
Just data, the user's data. I mean, like what Facebook's doing with all the data they're collecting. I mean, I could imagine they could make a huge penny on that too, though. Not just dealing with hoping you're clicking on ads.
As the man who's the online presence as well, perhaps, I mean, how difficult is it to mine the data that comes off me on Twitter? Because unless I hashtag it, unless I put it in a keyed frame of reference, you could sit down with a human being looking at my Twitter feed and you'd know an awful lot about me, but to automate that must be incredibly difficult.
Yeah, Facebook has it easy because you just like something. Brecky Thompson likes Coca-Cola, but on Twitter it's not like I'm saying, yes, I like Coca-Cola. Coca-Cola is the thing.
Go on, Steve, Johnny, you were going to say?
I still think they could still pull information out of there. I mean, like you said, either it's with hashtags or I don't know. So, you know, people just tweeting after certain restaurants and so forth like that. That kind of data could be collected. I mean, what is that person into, you know, beer? Is it beer? You know, all those kind of things that you could collect off that.
Yeah, but I mean, if you own a speckled hen.
Sure.
I mean, that's where you're going to get problems then, is when if it says Guinness, that's fine. Budweiser, that's fine, because there's nothing else that's kind of spoken of like that. But you get some bit of notes, especially in the UK, and you're like, oh, bloody hell.
I just feel sorry for either the person or the computer algorithm that's tried to make any sense of my tweets and ramblings and utter nonsense.
Yeah,
I'll crash the server.
Yeah, I want to know the algorithm that's going to figure out Bishop's finger.
Oh, God.
Moving on.
Please not.
Yeah, and I've got a bit of an old speckled hen here.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah.
What about Fox's knob?
The crossover between that and STDs is amazing, isn't it? Gaz, what did you bring as a story, buddy?
Well, I went for... I'm not sure whether you're going to like this or not, but it's got to do with technology, and it's a first for the UK and a first for the world, apparently.
Oh.
Scientists and engineers have created the world's first artificial, or they're going to complete it. They've currently got one that they're testing, which is 150 metres long. First artificial surfing lake.
Oh, bloody hell.
Oh, yes.
Really? Wow.
Yep, yep. Apparently the first one is going to appear in a lake up in Snowdonia, and they can create, they've currently got something which is running, and the video which I'll ping into the chat room in a minute basically shows this long machine going down the middle of the lake, and it's creating a wave either side of it. And they can form this this wave, and I think they can create it up to about 3 meters high, I believe. And they can have it basically as long as they need it. As long as you've got the equipment and the length of run that you can create, you can have the wave which just runs either side of this this particular device. And I think, yay, go Snowdonia. That's gonna create lots of people going there to surf along this this artificial wave that they can create.
Well, there's one here that's showing up as Bristol. I don't know if that's...
Well, apparently, I think they're going to be putting one in Snowdonia. The first one, I think, is going to appear in Snowdonia. And then I think they're talking about getting one in around the Bristol area as well, I believe. But this one, I'm not sure whether this one is actually in Bristol or it was created in Bristol. But the first one that they're going to create, which is like, I think, probably commercial, is going to be up on a long lake in Snowdonia. Because this one is not a great length at the moment. I think it's about 150 metres long.
Looking at the video, in its simplicity, that's the great thing about it, because it's just dragging that huge weight around, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
That's the simplicity is probably the most amazing thing about it, because...
Now, are you looking at the are you looking at the straight one, or are you looking at the curved one?
I'm looking at the straight one.
Because I found...
Snowdonia.
I found a picture of a curved one as well.
Have you?
I'm just feeding it through to the feed. You'll get it in a second. But okay. There's like a washing pool... it's the same kind of principle of pulling a weight around the the thing, but it has a whole line of, it only goes in one direction. So
I see it. Yeah,
I'm guessing with the Bristol one, you can wave up it and then wave down the other side.
Mm. But, yes.
But that's interesting.
But the video on this one shows you in action, and somebody actually surfing along this. It's not a 3 meter wave, but it's certainly a reasonable wave.
Well, and, you surf on pleasure cruisers.
Apparently, they can form
it.
They've got some characteristics that they can create out of the wave as well. So,
I mean, do they make tubes? You know, the kind of.
Well, if it went up to 3 meters, I'm sure that could possibly create a tube. But obviously, at
that's
the moment,
10 feet, yeah.
And the video only shows about it's only about. Probably 3/4 or a metre high this wave.
That's the well.
I mean, if you've got a wave, you will create a tube. You've just got to make the wave high enough for somebody to be able to surf down the tube, of course.
Well, I mean, I'm not a surfer, as you might guess. They haven't made that wetsuit yet. But I would have
or a big enough board.
No, but if there was a surf centre, I mean, I live 100 miles from the nearest bit of water,
yep.
that would be even would have a crap surf on it. So if there was the wave centre at Bristol, it's only an hour or hour and a half away, or the wave centre at Nuneaton or something like that, I would go and have a go at it. I would definitely give it a try.
And I suppose they could control, because for like purpose of trading, you'd have the perfect wave every time, wouldn't you? You could control the height and the velocity of it as well.
Exactly.
Yeah, I mean, it's hellish having to drive down to Cornwall to, you know, find a wave, isn't it, really? That's
what's the surfing like in Sweden, fellas?
There's hardly any.
Yeah, pretty much non-existent. It's windsurfing, pretty much.
You get killed by the ice flows.
It's not that cold.
The polar bears and the walruses, pretty much, that's the biggest problem we have.
Yeah, yeah, and the polar bears, of course.
Mm.
Now, they hunt you down when you're in your igloo at night.
Yep.
Now, Lake Michigan is slightly tidal, but I don't think it's enough for a crester, is it? So
yeah, you're not.
So you're not a surfer either, or you have been, or you are, or
I'm not. No.
Would you if there was the Lake Michigan surfing?
I would do it. Yes, for sure.
Yeah. See, that's the thing. It's just availability.
Well, I'm thinking also, you know, these long lakes that they've created for the Olympic rowing, for example, loads of countries have got those long, straight bits of water. Just stick one of these down the middle, and then when they're not...
Dual purpose, aren't you?
Well, yeah. In fact, it could be quite good. You've got the rowers chasing the wave. That would be interesting.
Yeah, there's. Yeah, you do the white water stuff on the same lake. Yeah. Just turn that thing up to high. Batwench says, why go to Cornwall? You've got the Gower Peninsula, of course.
Oh, yeah, of course. Yeah, sorry, Batwench. Yes,
and you've got the Seven Boar as well, haven't you? Don't forget about
that. Yeah, well, that's how much don't get talc too many of those, though, do you, really?
How much talc would it take to get Ewan in that wetsuit, says Batwench? I nearly swore there. I nearly gave myself editing this weekend that I don't have time for. Jesus.
And I was going to go for another story.
Go on.
This is real quick because it was mentioned earlier about outside toilets.
Hello.
Right, he's all ears.
Yeah, I said there could be, this is another story, I'll ping this into the chat room as well. It just got me because if you read this sentence together, you've got to be very careful. It says there could be big changes afoot in the smallest room if some designers have their way. From a new kind of toilet that offers a more comfortable squatting position to showers that use fragrance and a toothbrush that can test glucose levels.
Mm.
I just hope that's not all in one package, really.
I was just going to say the same thing there. I really don't want to see all this like a combined product of some kind. That would be scary.
No, it will be in Japan.
Yes, probably. True.
Mind you, yeah, no, because the sit down toilety showery thing is very very transferable, isn't it? Yeah,
absolutely.
Mm. Yeah. It was more toothbrush that got me really with the toilet combination.
I was desperate not to get too stereotypical there, but it's. No, we'll give that a go. Thanks, Gaz. That'll change my life. Streak, what did you bring, pal?
Something that kind of tumbled in late last week. Apparently, our pals at IBM have made a somewhat interesting discovery. They found a new kind of plastic, which sounds boring in and of itself. But this one is kind of special because it does things that no current plastic does. It can heal itself. It's way strong like human bone, I believe they compared it to. And it's actually truly recyclable, unlike contemporary, current, very common plastics. This one can actually be remelted back into its more, kind of like gelatinous, semi-liquidy form and be reshaped into something new, whilst other plastics, they pretty much just have to be tossed away and melted down and they can't really be reused in the same way. So, major breakthrough in polymers, the biggest and like the first new kind of polymer in like 20 years. Yep. So that made an enormous theoretical like projection for the future here. I mean, this could really change up almost anything. I mean, plastics changed everything back in like the 50s. Could theoretically be standing on the verge of another almost the same change again.
Mm. And his name is polyhexahydrotriazine.
Oh, that trips off the tongue.
Exactly.
PhD. For short.
So what are the applications that they're envisaging for this, then?
Pretty much anything. Like aerospace and semiconductors are some of the things they mentioned right away. It'll be lightweight, but way stronger. So already there, we can see tons of applications, I would say. I mean, primarily aerospace, I would imagine, if they can make something that doesn't break up in the atmosphere.
But even smaller handheld devices like the plastics that are in your phones and your Sony Walkmans, if you use those anymore, any plastic device that you carry around could be made better with this kind of thing. A future Apple iWatch could be made out of this new brand new polymer.
Yeah, in theory. I mean, it would make stuff way more durable, which would be awesome. You could theoretically drop it in concrete and it'll survive and not crack and be an ugly mess afterwards. That would be kind of cool.
Okay.
Yeah, we were actually talking about this a bit at my office, and there's a gentleman at the office that his cousin's a PhD expert at a large company in the States, and he's like, I'm going to ask him about this because I haven't heard of it, and all he got out of him was, I don't know why this is getting so much attention. It's not that special. It's actually just a simple condensation reaction where water is condensed out, and that's where he left it.
Oh, right.
Okay.
That's what I got out of
it. Yeah, I mean,
we poo-poo that idea then.
I've been doing this for years. I thought about patenting it, but I thought, nah, what's the point?
All right, well.
That's the lottery ticket he didn't buy then.
No.
Yes.
Well, a lot of people seem to be very excited about this, and I trust in those lots of people.
Yeah, no, definitely.
Well, considering the first story I clicked on about this subject was the picture of on the post was the T-1000 Terminator, I just say end of humanity, isn't it?
Oh, you're at extremetech.com then?
Yes.
Is it? It's not the polymer alloy one, is it? Is that?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the one that goes through bars and.
Oh, yeah, it's going to kill us all.
Ah, oh, Christ. We're all dead. Thanks, Streak.
Bring us down.
Good story.
It's okay. I'm saving the Skynet story for next week. No, I have to have something to come back to.
Good man. Miles Dyson. We've had a review. Thank you very much. If you've got a review, please leave it in iTunes. We'll always read them out because they're absolutely fantastic. They make a big difference to our position in iTunes. So please, 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 if you have got an iTunes account, then download the show, leave a review. Also, if you're in iTunes, do the old unsubscribe, resubscribe thing. We had a good old little push in iTunes the other week from people doing that. So keep that kind of going over the next few weeks. Just periodically think about unsubscribing for a day and then putting it back in. Cheers. Chris has left us a review. He says, tech podcasts, British tech podcasts are a must subscription for every tech enthusiast, geek or fanboy. The shows take a good balance of mates in the pub and information each week. It's the Mac Show, the Big Show, the Pocket Show, which keep me company on my daily commute. Ewan hosts the show well and keeps the subjects moving out with a great panel, which includes Gamut, Wheatley, Wrighty and others. You get a global opinion of tech news. Thanks, Ewan and co. Please keep up the good work. You're more than welcome, mate. Thank you very much for the review. It means an awful lot. Very, very kind. Thank you. We've also got our Patreon draw going on this month. You've only got this week left to get yourself into the Patreon subscriptions. I think we're up around the $400 a month mark. So thank you very much, considering we're only in our second month. That's fantastic.
Congratulations.
Very impressed.
Nice.
If you're wondering what your money's been spent on, me in lustrous vision and a video capture card and a move around of the office here and some lighting for in here, which has got to go up in the next couple of weeks. It's all going back into improving the service from the network. None of it's going in our pockets. None of it's going to be drunk at the bash or anything like that. It's all about improving the studio and the service. So thanks if you've done it. Go to patreon.com/British Tech Network. Someone did leave a review that's going to be read out tomorrow's Mac Show saying that they had a hard job getting Patreon to work because they couldn't figure out how to spell it. patreon.com. I didn't say that, so I do apologise. And then they said they had two attempts. They ended up blocking their credit card. Which can't be levelled at me as a folder, please. I'm sorry. Thank you for your contribution, though, which I hope went through in the end anyway, because they had to write an email, so I didn't see whether it did or not. But, if you're entered in, Ian Ross won the backpack. I'll be sending that out to him imminently. And then also, this month, we've got MacPoor Software has given away a pile of Clean My Mac 2 and all that kind of stuff. Really good. Hyder 2 is going to be in there as well. Three licenses for each of those to give away. I've also got the fantastic iPad Air cover that was shot by Ian Lewis. Ian Lewis is a brilliant, in my estimation, a brilliant landscape photographer from Cornwall. And he shot a picture of a leaf. You can see through it. There's veins running through it. And you've got the matching image to go on your iPad desktop so that it looks like it's continuous. And I've got the thing here ready to post out. It looks absolutely gorgeous. I'm not going to draw that from the Patreon fund, if you like, just from blankly from anyone. It only fits an iPad Air. So if you've got an iPad Air and you're a Patreon subscriber, then please send me an email that just says, I'd like to win this. We've had a couple so far that have said that they'd like to win it. So we'll do a draw for that one. And you can win that. It's a one-off. It's an absolute... Well, it's not one-off because he's got one of his own, but it's the two-off. There you go. It's the second one. It might be nice if we get Ian to sign it, actually, but never mind. So that's Patreon. Thank you very much for that. Righty, what did you bring for us, boy?
Well, talking about cars and privacy and Google and those sort of things, there's a thing I saw on PC Pro today. Google's aiming to push out heavily subsidized Wi-Fi routers to local businesses starting in the US, so they can get you onto their services, so libraries, restaurants, bars, that sort of thing. So they'll basically be pushing out their own kind of cloud to these kind of places so you can get onto their services, because obviously Google make their money off you going to them, analysing your email, look at their ads and kind of things. Yeah. But the thing that makes me wonder is not everyone uses Google, but everyone likes a bit of Wi-Fi, don't they? We can't do without a connection or anything like that. Is this Google making a move to kind of get everything that we do? Because they're already doing it. I think they're running their own fiber, aren't they?
Well, they're having a lot of problems with that, though, aren't they?
Are they really?
Yeah, no, they've run into an awful lot of regulatory spooks, and also they've had questions, I think, where Comcast have been, I'm going to say less than helpful, but I think from what I've heard from some of the rumours, and they are just rumours, they're not my knowledge at all, but I think from some of the rumours, they've been obstructive. Which you can kind of understand. Exactly, yeah. So it's not... I'm not totally down on them for doing it because they want to protect their business, I suppose, but...
Yeah, but is that kind of thing where Google's trying to get into every little niche of your life where they want to analyse everything you do? Yeah. And obviously, they get, when you use Gmail or use Chrome or whatever, or use Google Search, they get you. But if you start signing up to these little Wi-Fi clouds, they're going to get everything, aren't they? Because they're not doing it to be kind, are they? Well, they're doing it to get every single little thing that you do. And the question is, how much are we willing to give up to get these free services? How much privacy are we willing to give up to have a little bit of internet?
Well, you kind of do that already anyway, though, don't you? I mean, it's if you sign up to the cloud or something like when you're out one day, you've got to give over an email and you've got to do a verification, perhaps in some cases. There's nowhere that's just blatantly, completely and utterly free. Yeah.
Are they tracking us? That's the question. That was my theory. Are they, once you're onto their network, are they tracking everything you do?
I don't know.
I know in the Google Terms of Service, VPN, like Gmail and Chrome and that sort of thing, you know, they openly say, you know, we're going to look at your emails, we're going to look at your net traffic. But are they kind of prying a little too far? Or are they doing it at all?
Discuss. There we go. What do we think, fellas?
Oh. Logically, I would assume that they are somehow taking a look at what we're doing. I mean, there's no such thing as a free lunch.
No.
They're doing exactly what Twitter is trying to do and make sure that their business is safe for the future. It's the way they're going to... It's their business model. Their business model. I use as little Google as I possibly can, but you can't avoid it. You just cannot avoid it. But I'm not going to, you know, start taking on all of their services because I'm not particularly a Google lover. But hey, that's just me. They give lots of good services to people, and if people are prepared to give up all of the details that they give in the way that they will be giving all of those details away when they're connected to Google, then fine. But they've just got to understand that, and I'm not sure a lot of people do, to be honest with you.
So, as a skeptic, would you jump on their free Wi-Fi?
No.
So you are that kind of, you realise the kind of, my kind of concern that if you jump on their Wi-Fi, they are monitoring everything you do.
I've got to back that statement up because I don't jump on free Wi-Fi full stop. So that's a little bit, you know, ambiguous to me to say no, just because it's Google. But it, you know, if Google said to everyone, you've got free Wi-Fi, I think there's... We've got to be a bit careful then, because obviously what they're driving for is to make sure that they everybody else then disappears out of the ecosphere because there's no business model for them anymore, and then they've got access to everything, and it's the Amazon business model as well, and I'm not a fan of it. You know, we like biodiversity on this planet, and I like biodiversity in the business world as well.
Except there's no bio.
Yeah.
Unless it's someone giving you shit.
Damn, you caught me out, Ewan.
Unless it's someone giving you shit. Yeah. I mean, it's... this is, I think, the thing that falls down rapidly. The only Wi-Fi system that's public that actually has any appeal whatsoever to me is the Virgin stuff on the Tube. And the reason is, I signed in once with my account, and then that's it. And that's where they have to do it properly. You have to pull up in your train, you have to get a massive dump of data, so that's why you're getting 40 and 50 megabits a second, and then you're gone again. And then you can review that data that you dumped at the next station, you get a whole pile of dumped more stuff, or you can send your emails out that have gone from your drafts and stuff like that. And that's the stuff that really works. But every other public Wi-Fi that I go on is a pain in the arse because there's no repetition or repeaters, if you like. There's no way of dropping one and picking up the next and dropping one and picking. And if you said, right, I subscribe to 10 of them and then I could always have a connection, because there's loads of people say to me, oh, why have you got a Wi-Fi? Because there's free Wi-Fi everywhere out there. Yeah, but it's a pain in the arse. I'm not talking about the privacy. It's a pain in the arse to sign in to then get what you want when all you wanted to do was check your tweets.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. For your iPad. So you carry a MiFi in your pocket. My MiFi's got 12 hours battery life when it just runs. That's it. And if you get 4G down in the middle of London, you just stick that in your backpack or in your back pocket, and you're suddenly a walking Wi-Fi hotspot, and every device you've got is pinging off it constantly. Why on earth do I want to go with a free public service? It's a pain in the butt.
We're in the know with that. You know to go and you carry your own Wi-Fi around. That's, you are in the know. It's to the larger population of people out there who just want a connection, and do they realise what they're giving away when they sign up for these things?
Yeah.
I think that's what they're preying on. They're preying on the ignorance of the public who's just going, I want to check Facebook, I've got no 3G, or the Wi-Fi, or I've got a limited data cap, I'll jump in the free Wi-Fi. They don't realise the implications of what they're signing up for. They don't read the terms and conditions either.
One of the first points that I made on this podcast was that new technology often changes business models. And we're seeing a very careful beginning of mesh networks right now, where things like Wi-Fi hotspots and 3G base stations and 4G base stations are just irrelevant because everything's connected via a mesh instead. Phones are connected to each other, computers are connected to each other, and everything's just talking to each other via Wi-Fi or Bluetooth or whatever's available.
Yeah. But you're not getting connection to the net that way particularly, though, are you? It's not. If they want you to connect to the net, if you want to go down to the Starbucks or that kind of stuff, you've got to sign in, you've got to use your email, you've got to enter a password. There's no trip and load from everywhere as you walk down the high street.
Well, as long as somebody in the mesh is connected to the network, or a group of somebodies are connected to the mesh and the internet at the same time. What if, my computer is connected to the internet via cable, and I've got a Wi-Fi signal, and my neighbors have Wi-Fi, so they could use my Wi-Fi and connect to the internet. And then their neighbors could connect to their Wi-Fi and use my internet connection, and so on and so forth.
Oh, my life.
That service that basically did the same thing. You got a little Wi-Fi device, and you could put out a signal, which anybody else who was on that service could then, if there was one close by, you could then latch onto it. I think BT took them over. Oh, it was a Spanish company.
Fon.
Fon, that's it. Yep. Yeah, Fon.
Yeah, I mean, that's the sort of thing. They still do that, don't they?
But they were only a Wi-Fi network. They didn't have mesh technology built into their systems.
But that's the sort of thing, you know, that you're talking about now. And Google is in place to be able to do that. And they've got the money to be able to do that. That's what you're talking about, I suppose.
But we need a vastly different technology. I mean, at the moment, the system that Apple uses to send files between phones when there's no Wi-Fi or where there's no internet connection is this AirDrop or whatever they call it. They use a variety of the mesh network system, where you use your Wi-Fi and your Bluetooth to connect to devices around you, and then they can connect to other devices around them and so on. So if somebody at the front of the train has an internet connection and me at the back of the train doesn't have an internet connection, I could just connect to people and people in a chain all the way until I reach the guy at the front of the train and he connects to the internet for me. And this is all transparent to me.
That
as long as they
to
eliminate the latencies,
though,
I'm all for it.
Yeah, latency is obviously going to be a problem. This is not for, you know, real-time strategy games or FPSs. This is something that people are going to do to, send emails and check their Twitter accounts. Maybe, you know, call emergency services if they're stuck in a tunnel.
Yeah, I've got a healthy dose of skepticism with that, I think. And I do think it is healthy. I'm not sure that kind of integration is something that we're really, I don't think people trust it that much. For that, I mean, if you tell the average user that they're getting their connection off a bloke at the front of the train, yeah, they'll probably be pretty happy about it. But when you explain to them how they're doing it and what the issues are associated with that, I don't think you're going to find them as happy anymore, because they don't understand the security element of that in the slightest.
Well, the security is not the issue here. Security is even better. There is really a lot more privacy doing it this way rather than connecting to a 4G base station that some company owns. Because at this point, I mean, using a mesh network, nobody knows who anybody is. And that's always going to be a benefit to everybody. And I don't think people understand how 4G networks work either. I mean, what's a handover? What's a base station? How does signaling work?
Yeah, but at least they put their trust and faith in something being in control of it, which they understand, and they understand that they've got a carrier they can go to for complaints or for breaches or for, and with that kind of process, there isn't. And that's where what will scare them away. And unless the public latches on to the concept of something as being secure for them, although they might latch onto the concept of it as being available to them to begin with,
sure.
But then there will be scare stories that are put out there because that's what the press do. And then it's a case of suddenly trying to get them back into a safe mind process, if you like, which you know, once it's undone with a few words of crap copy, is damaging. There was an interesting story this week I'm going to talk tomorrow about on the Apple's on the Mac show, about a guy that said that Apple's customer service experience was detrimental and it's gone down horrifically. And you read the article, and the article says, actually, I went in the store and I had a great service. So, you know, It was just they walked up to somebody and said, who's the people with the best customer service at the moment? And not enough people replied Apple for them to be in the top 10. So therefore, Apple are failing. But they, I mean, I thought it was horrific journalism. It was the worst piece of journalism I've ever seen in The Independent. And I rate The Independent as a newspaper, and it really is not good. So that kind of negativity, if that goes on to something that's mass use like MeshNet, which you can get people flocking away from it, and then, it could get horrible.
It could
be the awesome cyberpunk dream of the future, or it could be a complete, what's that? Oh, that's a little anecdote in the history books.
Yeah, absolutely.
I see it being as something that comes up alongside existing networks, at least initially, that mesh networks will be available. So somebody could just turn off the 3G part of their phone and just use the Wi-Fi to connect to friends and family around them. But I don't see it taking over anytime soon.
And Johnny, you've got you've got interest in people getting access to your content as a web developer as quickly as possible. So, what's your views?
I don't know. I would be a little. I don't think with the mesh networks, I agree with the public with not having a place to go, like you said, like a carrier, and saying I'm having problems and stuff like that. I think that would be the biggest issue. But with adapting that, I feel like you talk to a lot of people, and they like the ability to say, like, okay, this is who I would go to if I have problems or questions. Actually can call this number and talk to somebody about it, but no.
No, that'd be better, definitely. Mm. Good debate. Good. Actually, great stories this week. Really great stories. Fantastic. Thanks, fellas. This podcast and a lot of the others on the network are supported by the Network Union. They're the ones that give us the bandwidth or the broadband connection into the place here under BT Broadband. They do tons of other stuff, though, as well. Don't be misled by me crapping on about broadband all the time. They do the business broadband service, and they'll help you tweak it if you're a business broadband customer. And, yes, you've got your direct relationship with them through to BT as normal. And what tech... the Network Union are providing in between is a layer of added support, but they'll come and help you with your in-house systems as well. As so if you've got a WAN or a LAN system that can do with a bit of tweaking, they'll be the people that will come in and sort that out for you. So it's a two-layer support thing that's going on with them. If you're a BT business broadband customer, then they're a first call for you to see if there's anything they can do for you. If you're just carrying BT business broadband, just send them an email. They use that email address to call you back and get in touch, nothing more. And if they can help you, they'll tell you. And if they can't help you, they'll tell you. So check them out. If you're a BT broadband customer, give them a shout and just see what they've got on offer before you even start anything else. And if you've got a massive system on your own, then they've got that expertise. The boys and girls down there have got a long history of experience for dealing with internal systems, WANs, LANs, etc. So give them a shout about that as well, see what they can do for you. The Network Union, please support them because they support us, and they're big supporters of the Patreon fund as well. As they've chucked a very large sum in each month for the Patreon thing, so thanks very much for them supporting us. We do appreciate it. And UK2 are also a big, so I need to do a better logo for them with this one, because the logo doesn't show up on the background. I'll get to it, I promise. I will. Bit going on this week, though. UK2 support all the network. They pick up all the bandwidth. They give us a server, which would cost us £400 a month if we had to buy it commercially, which we haven't got. We don't even get that in Patreon funding. They have been worth their weight in gold for the last 4 years. We've had no bandwidth charges, no server charges, nothing. If we want a domain name, when we swapped over to British Tech Network, we said, oh, we want these network names. And they said, yeah, no worries. And they just passed them over to us free of charge. Thank you very much to them. They've been a great supporter of the network for a long period of time. If you want anything for the web, domain names, co-location services, VPS, VPN, yeah, like we've just been talking about, then go and check them out, because they've got some fantastic services for you to have a look at. And you can save a fortune as well. If you go to the sponsors page, you'll find Network Union there, and you'll find UK2. And UK2 have got some offer codes. You can get massive reductions on what's in your basket. So please, please, please check them out. They're brilliant. We love them to bits. Right, fellas, do we have a cool thing? Streak starts off, boy.
Sure thing. almost 3 years ago, I got involved, like I said, with the whole network by writing a blog post.
Yeah.
And back then, it was about security. I'm still on that track today, and kind of a celebration of the three-year anniversary. I would
was
just
it today?
Like to pick... not quite today. It was
close
on
enough.
The 27th of May, I believe.
All right.
If I remember Great. Correctly. So we're close. Close enough. So my pick is a password manager, especially related to a certain eBay having a bit of an issue quite recently. So I would just like to, everybody to please go out, get a password manager, get 1Password, get keep X or get LastPass, get any of them, start using it, start upgrading your passwords, and make unique passwords for every service. Thank you, please, in advance, from everybody in the tech community.
I've got all my passwords in a book taped to the underside of my desk.
Well,
never
it's a system,
them.
It works for you, and as long as you keep unique passwords,
never
why not?
Forget them. Hmm. Actually, I've been spinning that shit for 3 years, and everyone believes me.
You think?
No, not everyone.
The key thing is that you have a system, that you have good passwords, and that you have unique passwords above everything else.
No, I've just got the same password for everything. It's easier.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
I don't forget it. Yeah. No.
It's a correct horse battery staple, isn't it?
Shit.
Ah, there we go.
Gonna have to change it now. good pick, mate. Good pick.
Yep. Cannot be said many times enough, I fear, but please get a password manager.
Please, please,
anyone.
Please. Johnny, have you got a cool thing for us?
I actually really don't.
Oh, you don't?
I really don't, no. I mean, is it, I guess, cool thing being anything?
Any cool tech. Anything that you think's really cool at the moment.
Well, this is a little, it's older, but it's actually fairly new to me. Being in the city, I'm always fighting with my Wi-Fi and with the neighbors because we're all on top of each other.
Yeah.
And I did find this equipment that actually, instead of, you know, you can pass the internet through your signal in the home through the power, but instead this actually goes to the coax, your cable coax for the home itself. And it's the speeds are amazing. So that's, I mean, I don't know if it's like cool tech,
it's coax.
A little older, but... Through the coax, not through the power lines of the house, through the coax of the house. And so that has saved me huge in my home. So, that's my cool tech, I guess.
Excellent. Excellent, excellent. That'll do. See, that's all you needed, mate. Nothing special. Brecky, did you bring something for us?
Yes, I did. This is also older but new to me. I realized I've been a big fan of television and movies for as long as I can remember. I grew up with Star Trek and I love television. But I realized the other day that I've never actually watched Doctor Who. So me and a friend decided we launched a podcast where the both of us just started with classic Doctor Who and move onwards from there. And we just reached the second Doctor. And I'm having a lot more fun than I thought I would. So 1967, place to be.
That's not Hartnell. Hartnell's the first, wasn't it? Who's the second?
Second is Patrick Thornton.
Thornton, that's it, yeah. He's a little bit early for me. My first one was John Pertwee.
Yeah. Oh, third Doctor, yeah.
Yeah, and I remember as a kid going up to my grandma's, and I used to stay up there on a Saturday night, and there was one, and this is a stupid thing, I used to watch the Daleks, and I loved the Daleks. It was absolutely brilliant, never had a problem with them. And then there was one, that there were these little white worms that looked like maggots, and I shit myself. I remember I was sitting behind her chair, I couldn't watch the TV, and I remember it so vividly. And now I look back and think, but there were only these like white maggot things, and I'm sure Batwing is going to tell me which episode it is, but I cannot, I absolutely crapped myself over that. I hated it. But there's some episodes of the John Pertwee stuff were real. They got me a real twitch on.
Yeah,
we're going to be up on John Pertwee in another 2 or 3 months or so. If you want to hear two Swedish guys rediscovering Doctor Who as you know as the Brits did in the mid '60s and onwards, look up the podcast Who's Who because that's what we do.
Good nice man. Name.
Thank
nice
you.
One. Batwinch.
I'm so subscribing to that.
All right, then.
Batwinch, never watched Doctor Who.
What the who?
Can't replace him. calm, Batwinch, says Paulums in the chat room. Well done, mate. Just pulled her off the ledge. Brecky, you wouldn't be back, mate. She'd find you. She'd find you. You've yet to make... In fact, Batwinch wore a TARDIS dress last year.
Nice.
To the bash. Did. If you get a chance to come over for the bash, come over. And Batwinch will be there. She has... she's already picked her material out, but she makes her own dress for it. And last year she came as a TARDIS, and it was very good. It was very authentic, as I did say on the podcast. Gazmas.
I'm going to show this because I've just got to show this, really. It's probably the wrong podcast to be showing this on.
Go on.
But can you see that?
Lift it up a little bit. To 2014 Formula One, it's your tickets to Silverstone, is it?
Absolutely. And absolutely. It's not tech-related, I realise, but there will be quite a bit of tech, obviously, involved, because I'll be taking my cameras and I'll be taking a laptop and I'll have my Wi-Fi, well, my iPhone, so I'll be tweeting, like last year, the pretty much the whole event. So it's not really tech-related. And if you want something tech-related, I've just got into Fitbit. This is a little Fitbit Zip. Oh. We've got friends at work who've also got it. We've become friends and now... Basically, we're just rating each other, and it's really quite interesting seeing just how many steps and how many mileage you do a day around work, and how many stairs you go up and down. Especially me being on the fourth floor, and we trying not to use the lift all day. But so when I use my Fitbit and all the walking that I'll be doing at Silverstone, because I will be there from about the Wednesday or Thursday, because we'll be camping. Yeah, I'm camping over there. I know it's only, what, 10, 15 miles down the road, but I'll be camping there. And you do a lot of walking, but it is a great weekend.
Yeah, and fortunately for you, there was a wedding booked that weekend.
Yes, I know. Yeah, I heard.
So I had to move the bash to the following week. And the woman, the bad news is I made a right cock-up because she said, do you want the week afterwards? Like, yeah, that'd be great. We'll have the week after. It didn't clock at all in my head that it was my son's birthday that weekend.
Oh, dear.
So I'm in deep pup over that. He's having three birthdays now, effectively, because of that.
Brilliant.
So if you come into the curry, that's his actual birthday, and he will be there for the curry. So please bring him a card.
All right.
He deserves it because I'm a bad father. I'll give you the money back for the card that you bring, I promise.
Well, that could cost you.
Yeah, it could. But the good news is you get to come in. We don't coincide with the British Grand Prix, which means we're not going to get wet.
No.
Last year, it was beautiful last year.
Yeah, for 2 days, you got pissed on the Friday.
That's one day. British, you know, Britain.
British Grand Prix wet practice is kind of like, just doesn't, that's one sentence.
Yeah.
apparently as well, the mutant maggots in the John Pertwee episode were in the Green Death. Thank you very much, chat room. I should have known better than to make something up off the top of my head.
I'll make sure that's on our schedule then for when we reach that doctor.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and you can go, what the hell was Rankin going on at, big jester? Right. What a Jesse. Righty, what do you have for us, sir?
Well, following from Gazmaz, I've been trying to keep fit as well. And I've tried every bloody thing out there. And this is an oldie but a goodie. Zombies Run. You heard of that one?
Okay.
iPhone app. You can't really see it on there. But basically, it's a kind of running app, but it acts as a game. And you kind of, you start the app, you go for a run, it starts as a game, you're someone who's been in a helicopter crash, and there's a certain mission you have to carry as you run. But as you run, you are being chased by a horde of zombies. So basically, when you're kind of slowly jogging, you can hear them in your earphones kind of getting closer and closer. And as you, they get further and further away. And as you slow down, they chase you even more. Absolutely bloody terrifying, but you actually end up running really bloody fast. And they chase you all over, but there's missions as you go along, and as you go around your route, there's items to pick up and that sort of thing. It all uses GPS and everything, but if you really want to be scared fit, £2.49 on the App Store, absolutely bloody brilliant.
Oh, right, okay.
I love that, scared fit.
Scared, absolutely petrifyingly scared fit. But the audio is so good. You can hear them coming up behind you, and it makes you want to run. And as you slow down, they get louder and louder and louder. And as you get far, as you get faster, you basically are almost kind of have to run away.
That's great.
Are you scared fitless?
I'm scared fitless. There you go. I'm scared fitless.
My cool thing is my Zoom H4 audio recorder thingy. There you go. Oh, I hang on. Look, see, I can do. There we go. That's it. That's my Zoom. Oh, it's see-through. Look, hey, that's cool. My Zoom H4n. There we go. It's absolutely brilliant. It's a sound recorder device that you just put an SD card in here, and then you just press record, and away it goes. It's got condenser mics on the top. And I did a conference last week, and I could place all of my audio equipment on the lecterns, but I couldn't put my wireless stuff onto the speakers because they had to use the wireless clips that we're doing the main auditorium. So I put this next to one of the speakers, which was fairly good quality, and on one of the, you know, the little grippy things like a GorillaPod thing, screwed it in the end here, put it on, and I switched it on with a battery, and I thought I'll see how long that goes, but we'll see. I've got some rechargeable AA batteries. This recorded on MP3 for 10 hours constantly without a battery change. And without a card change on a 16 gig card, and there was still loads of space left on the card afterwards. The sound quality was great. I put it at 190 kilobits a second, so it was really good. And I'd never appreciated just how good this device was until last week. That is now easily the best money I've ever spent on a sound recording device. And the audio quality of it is absolutely brilliant. It doesn't sound like it's recording a speaker.
Yeah, no, it is absolutely terrific.
Really, really good. And you can hook them up and use them as live mics as well. So, I mean, you could have it here and use it as the live mic instead of the fantastic Sennheiser shotgun mic that I have, which Sennheiser USA gave me for Macworld. So thank you to them. Excellent. Where can we get a hold of your Streak?
Just hop on over to goodoldstreakmachine.com, my place on the interwebs where you can find all my digital endeavors, including a certain book, which I keep being reminded about, I should talk more about. But
too right. What's the book called?
It is A Simple Guide to a Healthy Digital Life.
And where can we buy it?
You can buy it directly from the website. It's
right.
Only available online, DRM-free, and all that stuff.
And how much is it?
It is five of those US dollars, and I have to think twice about what that would be converted to any other currency, so you have to check out yourself.
Oh, it's only about a quid. So.
Yeah, pretty much.
And I have to say that I'm going to coach you into getting that right, boy. I'm not having it. You're going to come on here and promote yourself. It was the last thing I do. Johnny, where are you, sir?
Chicago.
You've been way too polite, mate.
Polite?
Yeah, you've been sat in there politely, not trying to butt in or anything, and consequently, everyone's just talked over the top of you.
Yeah, that's all right.
You're on Twitter, I gather.
Yes. Yeah, I'm on Twitter.
Talking about Chicago life, weather,
yeah, and web development. Of, maybe some tech, some development, and beer. It's just some mishmash.
Oh, beer always goes down well in this way, mate. And also getting the therapy that you take to get over meeting Paul Wheatley.
Yeah, it's still going through that and paying for that.
Yeah, he's a costly man, mate. He's a costly man. Where can we get you, Brecky?
On Twitter, I'm at Brecky T. That's B-R-E-K-I-T. But if you want to hear more of my beautiful voice, I'm at Cycon.net. That's C-S-I-C-O-N.net, where I run more than half of all the podcasts.
Good man. Give it a listen. Always in for podcasters. Bronwyn's done the exact transfer of it. It's an apparently conversion. It's $5 is currently £2.97. So it's not even £3. There you go. You can have a smooth digital life for £3. Righty, where are you, boy?
Paulin's on Twitter and hang around at BritishNetwork.com. And here next week, I think, apparently.
You are hosting because I will not be here because I'm working. So it's you, mate, against the world.
Oh, good.
You've got help us. I think you've got a bit of a home panel, though. I don't think it's there's none of the it's the usual crew.
What, the Wurzels?
It's all your mates.
All yeah, my mates. There we go.
That's right. Batwench says that you have got a nice voice, Brecky, and of course Batwench does have a moist list, so we need to find out whether Brecky's voice goes on the moist list or not before we close tonight.
Is there just wait until you hear me record in high quality as well.
Ooh. What are you saying, my crap?
Moist ranking.
There's a moist ranking. Yes, absolutely. The Batwench's moist list. We'll find out in a moment when she types. And Gaz, where are you, sir?
Nice and easy, gazmaz.com, or on Twitter, where you'll probably find me at twitter.com/gazmaz. And I do a weekly podcast with my colleague from over in Washington, Guy Searle. We call ourselves the G-Men, and it's the mymac.com podcast.
Have you stopped calling him Guy Scratch yet?
Guy Scratch.
Have you done that yet?
I haven't, actually. I forgot. I'll have to try and
remember. You've got to call him Guy Scratch and see if he remembers.
Yeah, I will. I played
a game of pool with Guy Searle while we were at Macworld.
And big guy.
He, out of the 8 balls he had to pot, he potted the white about 12 times. And what was more sad was the fact it took me that long to win. He got to screw up 12 times and I still haven't won.
Right, I'll remember that this weekend.
Yeah. My name's Ewan Rankin. You can get me at Ewan Rankin on Twitter. We still haven't found out whether you've made the moist list or not, mate, so I'm afraid you're going to have to wait for that one. Yeah, no, you see, Robert, old Streak was right on there straight away. Well, so,
just tweet me the number on a scale from 1 to 10. Where am I on that moist list? Because I know I'm on it.
No mate, she's got it. She's just tweeted. She's just put in the chat room, we'll have to listen more and revise the list. Don't worry, Streak and Paulums. Paulums is on the... Oh, Jesus.
Oh, boy.
All right, boy.
Dun, dun, dun.
Oh, boy.
If he's on the list.
That's two mentions he's had this week.
It is. Jeez.
I'm not feeling as special anymore.
I do recall that I wasn't on the list as well. I'm upset now. My name's Ewan Rankin. You get me at Ewan Rankin on Twitter, EwanRankin. Patreon is spelt PATREON if you want patreon.com. And the bash is happening, of course. Do not forget the bash. 11th and 12th of July. 11th is for the curry. You buy a £10 ticket for that, but that's just a deposit. So you get that back. It comes off your bill at the end of the night. The Kismet is open, the best curry house in the world, and we're going to troll in there about 5 o'clock. There's beers on the bar waiting for us, and there's starters around the room for us to tuck into to keep us munching. There's a little garden out the back. We've got the whole of the function room to ourselves. It should be absolutely beautiful. And then you've got the following day to sleep it off in a lovely little garden village hall down in the local village called Water Orton, and you'll love that. That's £25 for a bash ticket. It's £5 extra this year because we haven't got a sponsor. So if we do get a sponsor, then you'll get that £5 back on the day, I promise you. If we don't get a sponsor, then I'm afraid we need to cover the costs. It's only just gathering the money together for us all to have a party. It's not Glastonbury or something like that. So please, get your tickets in. Please buy them sooner rather than later, because on the 11th of June, I'm committed to the venue. And at that point, I'm £400 out of pocket. So if we haven't covered the number of tickets that we need by that point, then I'll cancel it, plain and simple. So, and if you booked hotel rooms, it's in your best interest to get tweeted, because we'll have a little function or something, but it won't be the huge bash thing. Please get your tickets as soon as you possibly can. 11th and 12th of July, 11th for the curry, 12th for the bash. It was a great day last year. It was absolutely fantastic. We had great weather and it was loads of fun. Steve Neighbour doing MC, and we've got all the same folk coming to do the same things with the audio and stuff like that. And Paul Wheatley's coming down on the Be A Gamer Show podcast, and we'll do Big and Mac, and so it'll be the same as ever. Good fun. We'll see you next week. Thanks for listening.